This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction. And free shipping. And that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements. Featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to Went to Mary King's Meadow, the podcast that follows the fantastic Chelsea FC women's team. And Emma Hayes' farewell tour, the first steps towards a quadruple was the Conti Cup final, held at Molyneux this past Sunday, our opponents an old foe in Arsenal. Chelsea thought they had the lead when Mario Ramirez fired into the corner from long range, only for VAR to intervene and rule a touch from Aaron Cuppett's arm was enough to disallow a goal, if only they didn't clock off duty. Katie McCabe's arm under her chin, no penalty. Steph Catley missed kicking the ball onto her outstretched arm, no penalty. Kat Macario being brought down, no penalty. Extra time proved a step too far for Chelsea, for a Chelsea team playing their eighth game in 29 days. A fresher Arsenal cut through as Chelsea's defence, crying out for subs, tried to track back with Stina Blackstenius scoring the deciding goal. The aftermath of the game was overtaken by Emma Hayes' shove on Jonas Eidevall, but make no mistake, this was a virtual assisted robbery. And the title of tonight's show, Went to Moki's Meadow, episode number 130, is Virtual Assisted Robbery. We was robbed. Now, luckily, it's not just me, host Dean. No co-host in Dane or Jane tonight, but I am joined by the ever-excellent Sophie Spittle. Sophie, good to see you.
Sorry, it was on mute. Good evening, Dean. How are you?
I'm okay, I think. I think I'm over it.
Think I'm over it now as well. So
when we get into it, I might get back into that trance of hating VAR, but we'll see. see how we get on. And we're also joined by the delightful Simon Kingman. Simon, good to see you, mate. How you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Voice is still a bit shot from shouting at said referee and, well, Arsenal players in general, really. So apologise for that. But yeah, getting over it. Yeah, I suppose so.
Yeah, glad you mentioned your voice, actually, because there was a bit of discourse on Twitter about Chelsea support at Molyneux. What was it like at the ground? Obviously, I missed the game, wasn't there, but obviously you was with your socks. Great effort. Must applaud you for that. Obviously, weren't quite Thank enough you. For this game. But what was the Chelsea end like, the atmosphere like?
I personally thought it was pretty rubbish, to be honest. It was like an Arsenal home game. They had three sides, basically, but we weren't making a lot of noise, apart from Basil when Frieda got injured.
Yeah, which I'm sure we might touch on in a bit. Sophie, what about you? Because I think Chelsea fans come under for a bit of criticism for their turnout. And why do you think? Is it because it's their only cup final this year? You know, it's their biggest game of the season left. This one. Nothing else to play for in terms of the league, FA Cup, Champions League, that their fans turned up for this one in numbers?
I'm going to be controversial here. I think it's a simple fact Arsenal have got more fans than Chelsea as a football club, men's side and women's side. And those fans are more established, more prepared to maybe travel a little bit further than some of the Chelsea fans are. And I think there's not a lot we can do about that. If you've got more fans, you've got more fans, you're going to get more fans that travel. So yeah, what didn't help our atmosphere was the fact that all the hospitality seats in our end were full of Arsenal fans. So that just really didn't help when they were deliberately trying to antagonise us by singing Arsenal songs and laughing at us and stuff like that. So yeah, I don't think that helped the situation either when they had three sides of the ground and an element of seating in our end as well. So, but no, I think we were a bit quiet, whether that was the football, whether we were as tired as the players, whether it was just the trying to compete with the Arsenal fans. I mean, there were a few of us that were trying to make some noise throughout the first half and throughout the game. But yeah, it gets a bit hard when you're not getting any sort of feedback from anybody else around you, really. So.
Yeah, I suppose Arsenal perhaps reaping the rewards of what's been a consistent push for their women's team and supporters over the years, where we have just sort of started on that road. And whether we get to that stage or not, I don't know. But, winning helps, of course, in terms of atmosphere and performances. And as we get on, as we talk about, it was a bit of a tired performance from the team. Now, remember, you can listen along live to the show on Mixlr, mixlr.com. If you search for Went to Mo Kings Meadow, you can join in the show by posting on the live chat page. Sorry, as Johnny and David already have this evening. Good to see you both. If you put in your comments there as we go, I'll try and read some out on the show and include your input. And if you are listening back on Apple or Spotify on the Went to Mo Kings Meadow platform, please make sure to leave a wonderful 5-star review. To make us feel better after losing the Conti Cup final. On the show tonight, in part one, we're going to discuss all the talking points from the actual game itself. And in part two, we'll discuss Emma's use or lack of the substitutes. And of course, that push on Idavel, which has taken over the timeline today on social media. Before we do that, a quick shout out for a couple of charity events. The first is close to Dane's heart. You heard him talk about it on the last show. I'm just trying to find the poster now. So this is Scarlett's story. It's a FC Scarlett versus a celebrity football club. It takes place at Sutton United. It's Gander Green Lane on Saturday, the 4th of May. Kickoff is at 3 p.m. Tickets cost £10, and under 12s go free. And then back in September 2010, a 10-year-old Scarlett's life changed. She had a rare canova that ruptured in her spinal cord, and as a result, she lost the use of her legs. Since then, Scarlett has been working really hard on her rehabilitation, but as you can imagine, the costs involved in this are very high. And this is a way of supporting the family. This charity match has been arranged. It includes a lot of EastEnders people. So if your wife or your husband likes EastEnders and you like football, you both get a win on this. Or you can just laugh at Dane playing football and help raise money for a good cause as well. And then the other charity event, I'll just try and find that now, takes place on Sunday the 26th of May, which is the day after the Champions League final, which Chelsea will take part in, obviously, when we beat Barcelona. Now, this is a Chelsea Legends match versus an academy side, which will take place at Dorking Wanderers Football Club. The kickoff is at 3:30 p.m., so enough time for you to fly to Bilbao, back again, and then watch the original Chelsea ladies team from 1992. Take on an assorted academy team. All the money raised is to help support grassroots girls football. All the information for that is on Tony Farmer's Twitter account. So it's at TonyFarmer13. And I'll try and remember to post the links in the description box. And when we come back from this short interlude, we're going to get into all the Chelsea action. Right then, Chelsea lining up for the Conti Cup final in a 4-4-2 formation. Hannah Hampton in goal. A back four of Viv Perisay, Jess Carter, Khadija Buchanan and Neve Charles. Johanna Rhys-Cameron, Erin Cuthbert, Melanie Leupolz and Lauren James made up the midfield with Shirka Nuskin and Mayra Ramirez in attack. Emma Hayes made three subs. Guru Wrighton coming on for Ramirez in the 77th minute. Kat Macario for Shirka Nuskin in the 96th minute. and Aggie Beaver-Jones on for Lauren James in the 119th minute. That left Ciro Mucevic and Katrin Berger, Sophie Ingle, Ashley Lawrence, Frank Kirby and Mika Hermano as unused subs. Looking at the stats, Chelsea with 50% possession to Arsenal's 50%, of course. 15 shots to Arsenal's 13. 3 on target for Chelsea with 6 on target for Arsenal. 7 corners for Chelsea, 2 to Arsenal, 15 fouls to Chelsea and 10 to Arsenal. Starting, of course, as we do, Sophie, with the lineup and Emma going with Ramirez up front instead of the same team that beat Arsenal at Stamford Bridge. And I felt a little bit like it ended up being caught between, you know, a rock and a hard place on what to do. And it didn't really work out the way it did at Stamford Bridge. And maybe because Arsenal would have been expecting that.
Yeah, I think it was probably the right decision because I think Myra had a big impact on the game. From the start, she was causing Arsenal defenders all sorts of problems, like she's caused most teams' defenders that she's played against. Unfortunately, as per most games, the Ajax one this season being the exception, she didn't get any of the fouls, or she didn't get many of the fouls that seemed to happen. So yeah, it's the same as we've said before, exactly the same issue with Bunny Shaw. They're so strong that the referees automatically assume they've made a foul when they win the ball, and actually it's just the strength that's done it. So, but she did cause problems, and she scored the goal that was disallowed, and what a goal it was as well. And that's the, what's the word I'm looking for? The not the potential. That's the impact she can have when she plays. So I think that was the right decision. And looking at the midfielders we had available, it looked like Nuskan was the only one that could have played in that sort of like up front 10 position alongside her. So I think in that respect, the team probably picked itself. The surprise was obviously Wrighton not starting, with arguably Nuskan or Ramirez starting in front of her.
Yeah, I think it was Matt last week, Simon, that predicted that actually, that Wrighton would miss out for James. And I know we're talking about this with hindsight, but I think James struggled to make more of an impact on that left-hand side than she did centrally. And we perhaps didn't see the best of Lauren in this match. But again, Arsenal knowing what she can do, made sure she didn't have an impact.
Yeah. Was it Fox sort of played tight to her all the time? Yeah, I suppose thinking about it, it's because she wasn't central, but she seems, yeah, not the Stamford Bridge Lauren. More the King's Meadow drifting in and out of the game Lauren. We needed her to sort of step up, but then we needed all of them to step up, didn't we, really?
Yeah. And obviously was going to be a big ask given, you know, what they'd gone through in the month of March. But you know, back to Ramirez, Sophie, and the game she had, because although, you know, Lauren may have struggled to have as much impact as she did at Stamford Bridge, Ramirez had a fantastic game. And I don't know if you've seen the clip back yet. It's from the FA player commentary where she's pulled to the ground and the commentator says, oh, it should be a free kick to Chelsea, and it just doesn't get given, which is remarkable given how much she had her shirt. And again, as you mentioned, the goal, you know, that strike from outside the box was absolutely superb. And perhaps she was one of the players that deserved more from this game.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, to be fair, I think all the players deserve more from this game. As Aaron said post-match, it was a game of fine margins. But going back to Ramirez, yeah, as I said before, she doesn't get the fouls that she should get just because she's stronger and refs assume she's made a foul to win the ball, but she doesn't. She runs with the ball. She takes players on. She causes mayhem. And yeah, it was a great performance by her. I mean, in terms of Lauren's performance, I think it's hard when she's played Arsenal, they tend to put two or three players around her. And if there's then no one for her to get the ball out to, it's going to look like she's good trying to do it all on herself. But she still came up with a few moments of magic that in another day, in another game, they would have been goals. The one-footed save from Zinsberger in the second half was absolutely superb. I mean, that and a lot of other games, that would have been a goal. So I think, yeah, while she wasn't the impact we saw with her at Stamford Bridge, I still think she was an effective player and capable of them at those moments of magic.
Yeah, I suppose, Simon, it's, you know, for Lauren, the bar, you know, is a lot higher than it is for pretty much any other player in Chelsea's team right now. And the fact that we're looking to her to carry the team in a way that we don't look to anyone else to do that. in an attacking sense. And, you know, had that chance in the second half gone in, I don't think we'd have this conversation at the start.
No, that's right. We expect, perhaps we do expect too much of a, I think Emma mentioned that in her post-match interview as well, didn't she? A press conference. Somebody asked her whether we played too many games in March and was it a step too far? And she said that if that had gone in, we wouldn't have been asking these questions. There were, I'd like to say, if you said there were a couple of times where she had the ball and you're just crying out for somebody else to come up with her, help her out a little bit, but just so tired, so tired.
Yeah, I think that's where that dynamic of her, Ramirez and Nuskin didn't completely work together. But as you said, one moment changes and it's a totally different conversation. And we'll go back to the goal, Sophie, because it was the first involvement involving VAR. Have you been able to watch it back at the time? Did you see what was going on? Or
no, not at the time. Saw some videos of it at half time. I haven't seen it big screen. I haven't seen a lot of it, but from what I can see, I think it's probably a fair decision. I think it probably did roll down Erin's arm, and I think she did move her arm forward, and it's that forward movement that probably meant that the goal was disallowed. I'm going to try not to rant about VAR, but I've never liked VAR. I don't want it in the men's game, but we've got it in the men's game. I don't want it introduced in the women's game. I don't like it. It wastes time. For things like objective decisions like offside, yeah, I get it. Goal line technology, I get it. But for things like subjective decisions, like whether somebody thinks it's a handball, whether somebody's hand is moving forward or not, we saw it in the men's game at Stamford Bridge on the Saturday. It just ruins the game for me. You're sat there waiting for a decision by somebody that's not at the game, not involved in the game, to decide whether a goal should stand or not. And if it takes them 2 or 3 minutes to decide, then clearly it's not a clear and obvious decision error. So therefore, the decision on the pitch should stand. Now, on Saturday, that would have gone for us. On other days, that might have gone against us. But I personally don't want VAR. And going back to, I think it's what Rich said last week, or it might have been somebody else, the referees have to be better. We can't just give VAR to substandard, or not substandard, that's not fair, semi-professional referees in a professional game and expect them to do the right decisions. The referees need to be better before we start giving them things like VAR. Rant over.
Well, we're going to try and get you back on another rant after we talk about the decisions first. So I'm coming to you on the offside goal, on the disallowed goal. You know, I am with Sophie on that, in the fact that it looked like Erin's arm moves forward and knocks the ball into her path. Absolutely fine with that goal being disallowed. What was your thoughts on it?
Yeah, 100%. I'd forgotten that there was VAR, to be honest with you, and we were all going crazy and then saw it on the screen. Goal being checked, possible handball. Yeah, watched it back sort of Sunday night, just flicked through to see it, and yeah, it was. But that's it. I think, can't stand it. It's those things, isn't it? Celebrating, everyone's celebrating, and then it gets pulled back. I keep thinking, no, I shouldn't feel sorry, but the Leeds game, the cup game, when the guy fell off the shed end, fell from the top of the shed, you think if that goal had been disallowed, all right, it wasn't a poor Leeds fan, but that person falling from the top tier and the goal's been disallowed by VAR. Shocking invention.
Well, there's a banned Leeds fan, actually. But yeah, less on that.
He deserved it then.
Obviously, that one, I think we're on agreement that, you know, it's handball. And there was a post online about, you know, it's not in the build-up because it's not the goal scorer that handballs it, but I think handball is handball. The second incident, obviously, is Katie McCabe jumping for a header with her arms under her face. I've been told by a few Arsenal fans online, Sophie, that she's not making her body any bigger, so it's okay that it hits her on the arm. Yeah, I don't know what to make of that. That, for me, was the most clear and obvious handball you could ever get.
These days, it's the handball rule is so, as I say, subjective, that one ref will give it, one ref won't give it, one VAR will give it, one VAR won't give it, one pundit says it is, one pundit says it isn't, one fan says it is, one fan says it isn't. I haven't seen this one as clearly as I saw the Erin one. And to me, it's tricky. If the Erin one gets given, then there's argument whether the Katie McCabe one should get given. But equally, she doesn't make her body bigger. Does she alter the does the ball's trajectory get altered by her hand? If the answer's yes, then it should be a penalty. If the answer's no, then it probably is the right decision. But I haven't seen enough of it to be able to say my thoughts on whether I think the ball's trajectory is altered. And for me, that's the key thing on handball. If the ball's trajectory is altered by the hand, then yes, it is handball. If the ball's trajectory isn't altered and your hand is not in an unnatural position or making your body bigger, then no, it probably isn't handball. But as I say, I haven't seen enough of that one to really have a strong opinion one way or the other, apart from the fact that it's Katie McCabe, so therefore it should be a penalty.
Yeah, Simon, have you seen what the thoughts on that one?
No, but the same as Sophie, yeah. It's Katie McCabe. She probably smiled at the referee and got away with it. We had friends that were down along the sides in the top tier, and they said it was handball. But yeah, it's McCabe. She's going to get away with it.
Yeah, good job. She's white. You know, for me, that one is, you know, you don't jump like that. And even if it comes off the Chelsea, I think it was Cameron flicks it on. You know, you don't jump with your arms over your face. You know, you head the ball as your job. The second moment, I think it's right in saying it's Steph Catley. It could be someone completely different. She completely miskicks the ball and it hits her arm outstretched. Again, alters, as you said, Sophie, that alters the trajectory of the ball because it might go out for a corner if it doesn't hit her arm. But for me, it's, you know, it's totally accidental. So I was actually okay with that one not being given.
Seen this one at all, so I can't comment on this one. But for me, if her to me, it doesn't matter if it's accidental or on purpose. If your arm is away from your body and not in a natural position and it hits your arm in the penalty box, or if it was anywhere else on the field, it'd be a free kick, so therefore in the penalty box it should be a penalty. So assuming that's the situation, was the hand was outside of her body and the ball hit it, then that's still handball, regardless if it's accidental or not. If her hand was in her body or in a position where she's jumping and it hits it, that's a slightly more different situation. But as I say, I've not seen this one at all because when we lose, I don't watch highlights back, I will admit. So I can't, I'm hypothesising as to what it was.
Yeah, well, I've wrote down, Simon, you know, totally accidental, but a penalty is a penalty. I think that...
Yeah,
the laws of the game. The laws of the game. Then you go by the laws of the game.
That was it was right in front of us as well, and we were all screaming, shouting, some louder than others. But like Sophie said, and the next one we'll come on to is the same free kick anywhere else on the pitch. So why not? It's one of my pet hates how they don't give decisions in the box that they would anywhere else.
Yeah, I mean, Sophie, that's obviously the Macario incident. What was your view of that like from where you were sat?
I'm just trying to remember which incident it was now. Is that the was that at our end, Simon, or was it the other end?
Yeah, our end. Towards the end, wasn't it? They'd scored. Arsenal had scored.
Yeah.
And it was literally a couple of minutes later. She got pulled down by sort of two of them.
Yeah, I remember. It was on the side of the goal I was on, I think. Yeah, no, she got pulled down. I mean, by that point, I was so resigned to us not getting decisions that I don't even think I shouted at the referee at that point about it. But yeah, no, I think that probably was... Yeah, I think it probably was a penalty. But then I think there were a couple of others that we probably might have got penalties for other than handballs as well. So, as I say, I think I was so resigned to decisions not going our way, not just penalties, but all over the pitch, that I was probably just like, okay, it's not going to happen. But yeah, no, I think that one probably should have been, yeah.
Yeah, so that's... I'll make that two penalties for Chelsea. I'm going to make it three because a penalty is a penalty. I'm not going to give Arsenal fuck all because I didn't give us nothing. You know, and it changes, obviously, the game, of course. As you said, fine margins, possession equal, shots equal, Arsenal a couple more on target than Chelsea, but not causing any real danger to Hannah Hampton in goal. And, you know, Sophie, we spoke, you know, I know we touched on this a little bit before we went into decisions, but, you know, after the West Ham game, you know, we said if Rhian Skinner wants VAR to help her team in the WSL, then her club needs to make that investment. But, you know, why bother when you see games like this and decisions are wrong? I think it just makes it so much more frustrating that the calls aren't right and they've even got the ability to check it.
Yeah, exactly. But again, it, as I said before, it comes down to it being subjective, and subjective decisions are always going to cause controversy, whether there's VAR or no VAR, and VAR just puts an extra layer of subjectivity into it. I think everyone's in agreement that referees need to be of a better standard in the women's game. When referees become a better standard in the women's game, then you can start talking about VAR. But it's not just referees at the games that need to be of a better standard, it's referees in the VAR rooms that need to be of a better standard as well. And now, where are we suddenly going to get all these top quality professional referees? We're not. It's going to take 2, 3, 4 years. And okay, yeah, as we said, Rhian Skinner wants VAR, but how are you going to implement VAR at Dagenham and Redbridge? It's going to be very difficult. How are you going to get it at Walton Hall Park? It's virtually impossible. You can't have VAR in some grounds and not in other grounds, because then you lose the integrity of the competition, which is an argument I've got with the Men's FA Cup this season. So, yeah, it's a really difficult decision. Yes, ultimately, we should have it. But until the women's game is played in stadiums that have got it or are capable of having it all the time and the referees are improved, there's not really much point in having the discussion, I don't think.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, Simon, what I love about, you know, going to watch Chelsea women is when you score, you can have a quick glance at the linesman. If there's no flag, you know you can celebrate. You're not going back 20 years to see if someone was offside on the day they were born. You know, it's just more of a pure game, isn't it? And I think, you know, we're going to lose that if we follow in the men's path of going into VAR too quickly without referees that are capable of, as Sophie says, you know, getting the results right.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I don't go to many men's games anymore, but that decision on Sunday seems to take a lifetime. I've never understood why they don't have 4 linos as well. I know they did some sort of European competitions, didn't they, a few years back. But would that help? Would another lino have spotted the pullback on Macario? Handballs, they can't cover the whole length of the pitch. So is that something before VAR gets brought in? Like I said, better officials. It's another one of my bugbears anyway, isn't it? Officials, but yeah, perhaps they do need help, but just not VAR help.
Yeah, I think we should look at, you know, the NFL. You know, you take away one man's power, increase it to, you know, if it needs 6 or 8 referees around the pitch, take 6 or 8, and then they can throw their flags and, you know, call decisions when they need to. Because you know, one guy isn't going to get, or what, one woman referee in the match isn't going to get every decision right, because they are human, you know, and we're trying to help them as best we can. If all these calls were in our favour, we'd be having the same conversation. Probably no, but you know, it hasn't. So you know, we are going to be, you know, pissed off about it. And you know, I bring in this comment from Johnny on Mixler. He says, "I think the Conti Cup final was the most frustrating game I've ever seen. As in, it's fine to chalk out the goal for handball when the build up, but neither the ref or VAR to look at penalty calls or fouls against Arsenal is criminal and uncalled for." And there's a mention here as well for the BBC commentators and pundits who were very pro-Arsenal, and obviously you two wouldn't have seen this being at Molineux. But I was very disappointed in the 3 pitch-sized pundits, at least. You know, Farrah Williams, I can't remember her surname now. Asante, and Ellen White. I know Ellen played for Chelsea a little bit early in her career, so she's not really a Chelsea ex-Chelsea, but the other 2 aren't. I don't think either of them called out the VAR calls on Chelsea. As for Rachel Brown-Finnis, put her in a room and lock the door and then walk away. I think it's the best thing the BBC can do with her career. She is absolutely terrible. She is up there with Michael Owen, Jamie Redknapp, you know, idiot's corner for commentators. And she hates Chelsea, as we saw in the Everton game. when she sighed when they blew the full-time bloody whistle. I'm surprised she didn't cheer when Stina Blackstenius scored the goal. And we should talk about the goal because it was sort of the killer moment in the game, Sophie. And
sorry, can I just say, going back to the referees, one of the things I find most frustrating about the referees is who I think are the two best referees in the women's game, Cheryl Foster and Rebecca Welsh. I look forward to having them referee Chelsea games, but they end up refereeing Chelsea-Arsenal games, and it appears like they have the worst games of their entire lives in these games. And I don't know if it's because we're watching it with blue-tinted glasses or if... I don't know. But it's just that that's what's really frustrates me as well, is neither of these referees that we've had in these Chelsea-Arsenal games are bad referees. They are good referees. That just doesn't seem to work for Chelsea in Chelsea-Arsenal games. Sorry, Dean, on to your other point.
Yeah, tinfoil hat off. Onto the goal. Yeah, it just looked like Sophie, a fresher Arsenal counter-attacking against a very, very tired Chelsea, especially in defence, and, you know, reminiscent of the men's cup final, you know, extra time. We seem to go into our shell and allow the opposition to grow in confidence, and they did. They had a couple of good chances, Arsenal, in extra time. And then ultimately, you know, Blackstenius gets that winning goal, and it was, you know, a real kick in the stomach, wasn't it?
It was. I'll be honest, I don't think either team deserved to lose this game. I think, obviously, it can't be a draw because it's a cup final. If it was a league match, we would have said a draw was a fair result. They got their chance and they took it. We got our chances and we didn't take it. You can tell our defenders were tired. They got a little bit lucky as well. The way the ball fell, that Erin couldn't quite clear it. And yeah, it's just sucked, really, basically.
Yeah, I mean, Simon, you know, a bit fresher Perisay, a bit fresher Cuthbert, maybe they get back in position of that second quicker has all the, you know, impacts. I know in part two we're going to talk about the subs and why not, but, you know, you just looked at Arsenal going forward with Cooney Cross, who was fresh on, Russo was fresh on, and, you know, it was just, you know, the minutes were just too much for Chelsea.
Yeah. I think we'd all got to that point where we were just, yeah, wanting penalties and just a killer blow, an absolute killer blow. But, yeah, Kate in full, wasn't it? Running down, bearing down on Eve. And Eve had sort of only just let her out of her pocket as well from the Stamford Bridge game, which was such a shame. But, yeah, it was gutting. It was gutting.
Yeah, especially having watched Virgil van Dijk score a header in the last minute. A couple of months or a month ago, and then to watch Blackstenius do one in the 25th minute of 30, I think it was. Yeah, League Cups, absolutely.
I'll name these ones.
Well, only if we win something else. Otherwise, we would take the Mickey Mouse Trophy, but we'll get on to that, of course, in part two. No player of the match poll because we lost. Can't do it when we lose, it just doesn't work. And even if I did, probably would have got it wrong, as I did with the Confederate Chronicle Player of the Month, because I forgot to put Perisay in there, which was bad of me, but I didn't have time to change the poll. So sorry to her for that. But talking of Kingsman Chronicle, issue 11 is coming soon, so that'll be the April fixture starting on the 14th when Chelsea travel to take on Manchester United in the FA Cup semi-final. Until that, the last few issues of issue 10 are available online for just 50p plus postage. So if you head to kingsmeadowchronicle.bigcartel.com, you can order a copy of issue 10. There are not many left, so if you want to get one of those, please do so. And of course, look out on all the social medias for the launch of issue 11, featuring some fantastic writers, including my two guests this evening, Sophie and Simon, of course. So make sure you check that out, and we'll be back after this short break.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Cheech!
JK! In all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chich, I'd be bereft. Inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live. It's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep, NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow, great. But yeah, I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK, and best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. Where do I sign up, Ginge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/Chelsea Fancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box.
Okay, welcome back to Wet to My Kings Meadow, part two of episode number 130. And the first question is really simple, Sophie. You know, why no subs?
Question. I don't know. I was thinking that on the day. After the Arsenal League match, Emma Hayes said something along the lines of Kat Macario had said how she was surprised at how intense the game was and that she struggled to get into the pace of the game. And I wonder if there was a degree of that on Sunday that Emma, and we heard it in the World Cup, didn't we, from the USA coach and a couple of others, saying one of the reasons they didn't make the subs was the game's so quick and it can take a substitute 2 or 3 minutes or even longer, 5, 10 minutes to get into the pace of the game. And that can prove, fatal's a bit extreme, but that can prove to be a really determining factor in the outcome of the game. And I just wonder if there was an element of that involved in that she was worried that the players that come on wouldn't be up to the pace of the game. I don't know. That's just something I'm trying to come up with in my head to try and explain it. Other than that, the only other thing I can think of is the players on the bench weren't fit enough to play, but you have to have players on the bench, don't you? So,
yeah, I mean, Simon, Sophie sort of, you know, that is sort of spot on, you know, when games are this tight, you know, making that change, you know, sometimes you don't want to do that. It's the worst thing you can do is change it. And obviously, Wrighton came on the 77th minute. Ramirez obviously coming back from injury. I think that's the longest she's played since then. You know, so it makes sense. And then, you know, I'm just looking at Arsenal subs. Obviously, they brought on Edina at half-time for Williamson, who was injured. They didn't make a sub themselves until the 72nd minute when Caitlin Ford came on for Lacasse. Then they made one more in the 84th minute. And then they made two more in injury time. So, although they make five, obviously one's an injury, so they only really make two more subs than Chelsea. But obviously,
anyway, Russo for Marnham's enforced as well, isn't it?
Yeah, of course.
Oh my God! Sorry, I'm just watching the football on the telly and there's a fox on the pitch.
Leicester not playing, are they?
No, it's Portsmouth derby. Sorry.
Driving off track now with the fox. So, well, I don't know what my question is, Simon, but I suppose you look at Beaver Jones on the 119th minute, you know, and I understand that when you've got Lauren James on the pitch, she does have the ability to make a difference in, you know, any second, so you want to keep her on for as long as possible. Yeah, but when we talk about, you know, the legs of Perisay, you know, you've got Ashley Lawrence on the bench, you've got Sophie Ingle on the bench, you know, there are players there. Of course, we don't know how fit they are, but you would have thought, you know, given how much they were struggling, and we could all see it, she would have made a couple of changes, and it felt like that cost us an extra time, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. I think it was just a fresher legs, wasn't it? I don't think there was anything on the bench that would have changed things necessarily, but yeah. But hindsight again, isn't it? Lauren perhaps would have kept up with Caitlin Ford for the goal. I didn't realise until we got back as well that Kankovic wasn't on the bench. She would have offered something different, but yeah, it's all ifs and buts, isn't it? It was just fine margins, and unfortunately, they scored.
Yeah, and as we found out, Sophie, you know, she did have Anne Katchenberger ready to come on. Do you think that that's...
We could see that happening on at the game. We could see her getting ready and sorting herself out, even if the TV didn't pick it up until she was just about to come on. We could see it happening for like 5 minutes beforehand. She was getting herself ready, so we knew that was going to happen.
Do you think that sends the wrong message to the players?
Potentially, but you've got to have that preparation. I think that's. I think we didn't stop attacking. We just tired. And I think if that's the case and you can see it happening, even adding on Ashley Lawrence for 3 or 4 minutes at that point in the game may not have made a difference. I mean, if you think about it, probably the only time in the game Perisay actually got beaten down that side. Again, if we'd won, we wouldn't be having these conversations, would we? It's so tricky, hindsight and all of that. Are you saying, yeah, we're going to settle for penalties? Or are you saying, hang on a sec, no, we're prepared for penalties and we're bringing the best person on to help us win that penalty shootout if we can't win it in extra time? I prefer to think of it that way rather than thinking of it as a, oh, no, we're not going to win it, we're going to settle for penalties way of thinking. And I think that's why Aggie came on and Lauren went off at that point, because she doesn't trust Lauren on penalties, which I don't think any of us do at the moment. So
that's the one thing Lauren can't do is take a penalty. Yeah, you know, and you know, Simon, you know, it's all if, buts and maybes, and, you know, the game's happened and we've lost, and it's easy to say, you know, Emma should have made subs, Emma should have done this, Emma should have said that, you know, a player should have done this, player should have done that, you know, but, you know, we've got to give our opinion on it. You know, and I think, you know, if I was on the pitch and I'm looking across and I'm seeing the opposition or my sub goalkeeper getting ready to come on, I'm knowing that my manager trusts her for penalties, you know, does that make you take that yard back and think, you know, we're going to just see this game out now, you take your foot off the gas a little bit maybe? And did it impact Southampton in goal? You know, does she not trust him for penalties? And, you know, she apologised after the game. Not sure what for. I don't think she did anything wrong. But, you know, it's all up in the air. And I just think a couple of decisions that Emma made were wrong. And it's not often that we say that.
No, I didn't realise at the time, to be honest. I jokingly said to Dylan, we'll see Berger coming on and it'll be a Man City League Cup final, wasn't it, with Kepa and Willie.
Yeah.
So that's the first time I've heard that. But yeah, it's all psychological as well, isn't it? That fascinates me, that sort of stuff. Seeing her getting ready. But yeah, I thought Hampton played really, really well. It was unlucky with a goal. Like say, it's all ifs and buts and hindsight. And yeah, it was such a tight game that it was always going to come down to one goal here and there.
Yeah, and sadly that went the way of Arsenal. Sophie, now 3 Conti Cup final defeats in a row. But there is really only one way to get over that, as we've done for the last 2 years, is to win the FA Cup and the WSL.
Yes, and hopefully this season the Champions League as well. I think the WSL is going to be harder than ever this year because we've still got to go to Liverpool. Although Liverpool didn't put up much fight against City, but they do against us. We've still got to go to Tottenham. And obviously we played Old Trafford last match of the season, so it's still in our hands. We've got to score a few goals. It's still in our hands. The FA Cup looks like it could be the best option, or not option, that's the wrong thing, the easiest, no, again, that's the wrong word, because it's going to come back and bite me on the bum if I say that. You know what I mean, the best way for us to get a trophy this season. But you watch, we'll go and lose to Man United or Leicester or Tottenham will beat us in the cup final now. So anyway, sorry, negative. Sophie's made a return. Yeah, I have a theory about the Conti Cup the last 3 years. although it kind of falls down a little bit. The first year we won it, we weren't in Europe. So therefore, there was no extra games. We were in it all the way through. We played the same number of games as everybody else. Second year we won it was COVID. We were in Europe, but we didn't have to play a big team in the final. We played Bristol City. The last 3 years, we weren't in Europe for the Man City game, but I think there were some other extenuating circumstances. But the last 2 seasons, we have joined it at the quarterfinal stage, and we've still been in Europe, and we've had a tough European group draw. And I just wonder, is it time for the WSL teams to say, actually, if you're in Europe, you don't compete in the Conti Cup at all. You don't come in the quarterfinal stage. You just don't do the competition at all. Couple of reasons. It saves, if we didn't have to play Sunderland, we didn't have to play City, and we didn't have to play Arsenal. And if we'd won, would I still be saying the same thing? I don't know. That's three less games in our players' legs to save us for European competition and the WSL. It gives the opportunity for teams other than the big three or four teams to win a trophy. And I think that's important for the fans of those teams to realise that they stand a chance of winning a trophy. So it's probably controversial and probably few people don't agree with me. But I actually wonder if we need to change it up completely, as I say. And if you're in Europe, you don't compete in the Conti Cup at all.
I understand where you're coming from. I think if all three teams qualify for Europe, say that's Chelsea, Arsenal, Man City, and you take those three out of the competition, you're going to lose any financial revenue that that competition would then make because you're the three biggest teams are out of it. Will it distract from a potential sponsor if the three biggest teams in the country are not competing? Perhaps if you're in Europe, you play your under 23 side in these games. Like the Papa John's Trophy or whatever it is called these days, where they go and play, get that experience against adult teams, or something like that. I've got a theory actually, Simon, that Emma froze the Conti Cup final in the last 3 years to provoke a reaction for the rest of the season.
Yeah, possibly. Possibly. They'd said, who was it? Erin said it, wasn't it? We'll use this as our motivation for the rest of the season. Yeah, possibly.
Just like saying,
I'm
let's
thinking
put a better goal
burn my
for.
pants as well, because they're obviously not lucky anymore. Three defeats. The shirt was Man City. The pants have been worn every game, and we've lost three this season. So
You're going to
I'm
shut them
burning.
in the ground if you haven't got nothing on.
No, just burning them and hoping that I don't get charged by Sadiq Khan or Ulez.
As long as you didn't use diesel, you'd be all right. If you use petrol to burn it, you're fine. I suppose we should move on to the push. And I didn't want to talk about this too much, but it has taken over social media, taken over journalists as well. I think the first thing to say, Sophie, is we don't know what was said or what wasn't said. We do know that Erin turned back after something was said. So it must have been said. Even though we don't know what it was, something was said. But my initial thought was, was it the place for Emma to do that on the touchline? We are the losing side and you lose with dignity. Even if Ida Vell's in the wrong, you take the higher ground maybe, then bring it up in the press conference, and put it on in that way. It's obviously a lot of emotions in a cup final and you've just seen your side lose in extra time. And I back Emma against Ida Vell. I believe what she says. But, it's unfortunately been one of those stories where journalists can jump on it quite quickly, and we've seen that on social media today. I think it was someone in the Daily Mail, but they hadn't tweeted at all about Willie Kirk, for example. Real issues have been swept under the rug, and something like this takes centre stage and blows up. It's just one of those, situations that get blown out of proportion, I think.
Yeah, I didn't see it at the time. We'd heard that it was alluding to Jonas actually pushing Eve Charles, but clearly that doesn't appear to have happened, and that's a rumor that was put out that wasn't true. But yeah, I think we've got to remember Emma's human. She's not perfect as much as we like to think she is. And yeah, she obviously was really wound up. There seemed to be a bit of a truce between them before the league match, after sort of like comments have been flying around in previous years, but that seems to have gone out the window now. But she was obviously really wound up, and yeah, I think she probably looks back now like she did with some the comments she made and think she probably shouldn't have done it, and it has been blown up out of all proportion. But yeah, as you say, we don't know what happened exactly. We don't know what was said. But it's the sort of thing in this day and age that social media and journalists will jump on, and she should know better. But we're all emotional beings, and she was reacting in the heat of the moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And Simon, she mentioned maladaggression, and we know that Idavar's got track record for that. You know, Gareth Taylor claimed he bullied the fourth official. You know, he squared up to Marta Thomas in the United Arsenal game. I think that was last season. You know, so we know that he's got that in his locker, and you know, Emma stood up to that, which you know she backed her player in Aaron Cuthbert, who had that sort of row with him, and you know, I back her for that.
Yeah. He's a bully, isn't he? Basically, you watch him and he's in the fourth official's ear all the time. He's McCabe, isn't he? She's in the official's ear. He's in the official's ear. Saw Erin squaring up to him. He sort of backed out of the way of the ball to let it run when it was our throw in. So I think it was another ball that was brought on quickly, wasn't it? And he reacted to that, stepped out of his box, and then Erin squared up to him. Should Emma have done it? We were all emotional, weren't we? I know I had a little girl that was ready to fight any Arsenal supporter she saw at Watford Gap Services on the way home, that's for sure. Not that I condone that, but yeah, if it's Arsenal. Yeah, just wanted to get out of there, to be honest, when that final whistle went. I know it was bad that we should have sort of stayed and clapped the girls, but just needed to get out of that stadium as quick as possible.
Yeah, I would have left as the goal went in, to be fair. You know, I'd say Arsenal fans are lucky that they didn't catch Verratti at Watford Gap.
Extremely, extremely.
Because they wouldn't remember the day, that's all I'm going to say. You know, but going back, you know, because this has been, Sophie, you know, the rivalry between Emma and Jonas has been good for the WSL, I think. It's been, you know, something that's been missing from the women's game. You know, and they've taking the 10 turns to get one over each other. You know, one wins one match, the next one wins the next. I think we've taken the more important matches over the course of, you know, this 3 year period that he's been at Arsenal. But I think this is, you know, a sad way for it to end. And, you know, they have, you know, pushed the game on, I think.
Yeah, and I think you made a really good point there. It's a rivalry
No
that
pun
everybody
intended, obviously.
thrives on, and it adds intrigue, it adds press, it adds publicity to it, which is all good things to get the women's game out there. Yeah, you're right. It is sad that it's ended like this. As I say, they seem to have had a little bit of a truce around the league match. They're sort of showing a little bit of mutual respect to each other, and that game just seems to have knocked it right out the window. That respect seems to have disappeared. Whether they will be sitting down now, Emma leaves for a cup of tea and a chat about women's football, will yet to be seen, because that was implied that that was what would happen at the end of the season. But be interesting if that does happen now or not. Yeah, I don't like Jonas. There's a few things about him that wind me up a little bit. I'm sure if he was Chelsea's manager, I probably would like him, although I like to think that I would still have the same opinion of him, but who knows? But we also know that Emma winds Arsenal fans up, so she tends to live in their heads rent-free, so it doesn't take a lot to get them going on Emma Hayes either. So yeah, it is sad that it's ended like this. It'd be intriguing to see what the next rival will be next year. Will it be Jonas versus Gareth, or Jonas versus Mark Skinner, or will it be somebody completely different, depending on who Chelsea get in? Bring it on.
Yeah, I mean, I'd started to like Jonas during the Euros, Simon. You know, I thought as a pundit, he was very good value for money. Obviously, very intelligent about the game. But just say on the touchline, you know, that switches, maybe that's because he's represented Arsenal. But there is a line, and, you know, I think we need to wait for the facts to come out of whether he's crossed that in this instance before we pass judgment. And I know, you know, Emma's already taken a lot of stick online for what she's done. But we've seen recently, managers like Willie Kirk across the line have been found out about it. Jonathan Morgan, has crossed the line several times in Heathrow and been found out. And yeah, there is a fine line in women's football that perhaps we don't have in the men's game that, we need to tread carefully around.
Yeah, yeah. It's all about respect, isn't it? It's how we are brought up as men to respect women and things like that as well. And it's just, yeah, it's just not on from him. I mean, I saw something earlier on and Joey Barton was sticking up for him. So I think that says it all, really. What a pair of numpties they are.
Yeah, the less said about them, especially Joey Barton. The absolute better. I think we sort of covered the game. Obviously, we don't do many defeats on this show. They don't come by too often.
Only one, funnily enough.
Yeah, Simon's the running theme so far. Well, I suppose I am as well, because I'm hosting. So
True.
Yeah, although I did hand the show over, but obviously Dane obviously didn't show up tonight, so good job I'm still here, I suppose. Otherwise, there'd be no show. Now, obviously, it's an international break. So, have you been watching England? Are you a national team fan, or are you a bit like me, Chelsea first?
Definitely Chelsea first. But no, I will watch England. I would have gone to the game at Wembley, but I've got friends up at mine this weekend, so that obviously takes priority over. We'd sort it all out before the England game was announced. Otherwise, we'd be going to Wembley. I love watching the Lionesses. I'm intrigued to see how many minutes our players get in internationals this window. Bear in mind, they are European qualifiers, so you've got to put the best team out for England, or who Serena thinks is the best team. But equally, players like Neve Charles and Jess Carter, they haven't got a lot left, and we're going to need them after the international break. So I'd rather they didn't play too many minutes, but I think, unfortunately, both of them will probably play the most of both games. But we'll see.
Yeah, I mean, Simon, I hope that they all withdraw from the squad. I hope Serena don't pick them, to be honest. I know these players probably want to play for the country and it's important to them, but, international football doesn't do it for me, I'm afraid. Just hopefully everyone comes through that injury free, because, April, Man United, Aston Villa, Barcelona, it doesn't stop for us, does it?
No, we go again, don't we, after this international break. And it's quite fearful as well, isn't it, really, after what's happened on previous international breaks with Mia Fischer and Annika Nguyen as well. So, yeah, just fingers crossed perhaps they should give Serena a little push in training or something like that to get them thrown out of camp.
Yeah, just get some pepper at breakfast and then just keep sneezing.
Yeah.
Alternative chain of thought here, and Erin Cuthbert alluded to it in one of the interviews. I've not seen it, I've just seen the comment that she said she's actually looking forward to getting away from Chelsea for a bit and out of that environment and into the national squad. And I think that's what the international breaks provide. They provide a break from the club routine, and they give you a break from all the people around that you're around all the time, day in, day out. And I just think that the players benefit, some of the players, I say, benefit from that. And it'd be interesting to see how many minutes Macario gets for the States as well, because hopefully if she can build up her minutes in the States, it means that she'll come back to us in a fitter position as well, so she can be even more contributory. I think I've made that word up after the international break. But I think that's a change of, it's like for us going on holiday, isn't it? We go on holiday, then we get a change of environment. That's what I'm looking for. And I think that's what the international break provides for them, and just gives them a little bit of a break from the club and from the pressure that comes with playing for Chelsea. So hopefully they'll come back refreshed in mind, if not fully in legs.
Yeah, well, I mean, they haven't got a stat Cobham. They can go, Barbados, where they're going to go. They haven't got a stat Cobham for the couple of weeks. Like I said, hopefully they'll come back injury-free and ready for what will be an intense run of fixtures again leading up to the end of the season. Now, we'll be back We're going to take a break, actually, although I'm not going to Barbados. I am going to the Isle of Wight, not quite as glamorous. But we'll be back on the Tuesday following the Man United game, which is, I think, the 16th of April, the Tuesday. Trying to look at my calendar now as we talk.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, see, I was right. Yeah, the 16th. With some guests who will reveal themselves on the day, because I need to do the planning for that. That is all we're going to have time for this week's. My thanks, obviously, to Sophie. Thanks for joining us again.
Thanks for having me, Dean. Pleasure as always. Good to see you again, Simon.
Yeah, good to see you, Sophie.
Yeah, and thanks to Simon as well for joining in, even with the sore throat.
Yeah, good to be on. Yeah. Helped with the mood tonight. Thank you.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely over it now. We look forward to the FA Cup. Now, you can, of course, follow us on social media. The show is at Mo Kings Meadow. I'm at D Mears. Sophie's at Traveller74. And Simon is at Kingman Simon. We're also on Instagram at Wentzamo Kings Meadow. And if you do like what we do and you want to help support the show, do things like the Mixlr live shows, the Zoom meetings, and the editing software, you can become one of our Patreons. In return for £5 a month, you get to listen to the show before anyone else. It's ad-free, of course. After 3 months, you get a Wentzamo Kings Meadow sticker that even I don't have. That's how exclusive they are. You do actually get a subscription to Kings Meadow Chronicle, which I always forget about. And there is exclusive content on there for you as well, and there will be this summer. So if you do like the show, please consider to support us via Patreon, as it helps cover the costs of all this, which is expensive. Even though you might not think the show is professional at all, it does cost money to run. As I said, we'll be back after the international break and after beating Man United in the FA Cup semi-final, of course. And until then, from Kings Meadow to Wembley, keep the blue flag flying high.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect! Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.